I'm Bill Littlefield, coming up on Only a Game, Beach Volleyball, when and where it's needed most. But first, I'm joined by Charlie Pierce for our look at the week's news. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Bill.
After an extension led to a second extension, the NFL and its Players Association now have at least a little more time to reach an agreement. Is there any hope that the next 6 days will lead to anything more promising than yet another extension?
Well, no, because I think the owners want this lockout, and I think there are enough of the owners who are willing to stand firm in order for management to get the lockout they want. I was a little bit encouraged by the ruling by the federal judge that the NFL had acted in bad faith and they couldn't use the TV money they had promised to the players to fund their lockout emergency fund. But I still think they want a lockout, and I think that's what they're going to get.
The contracts of pro football players, like the contracts of lots of pro athletes, often feature incentive clauses. Vernon Golston, until recently a defensive end with the New York Jets, had one of those in his contract. Did the clause do him any good?
There's a great old Saturday Night Live skit about Celebrity Jeopardy, where Alex Trebek finally gives up on Sean Connery and the rest of them and says, just write anything. All Vernon Golston had to do to earn $9 million was record a sack or force a fumble or recover a fumble.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do it.
$9 million.
I would have offered an opposing quarterback $1 million to let me sack him.
Meanwhile,
fall down.
The student newspaper at the University of Connecticut reported this week that UConn spent $1.8 million more than they earned for playing in the Fiesta Bowl. I thought football was supposed to be one of the revenue sports, meaning revenue in rather than revenue out.
Well, remarkably, the University of Connecticut, in its first try at a major BCS bowl game, only sold 2,700 tickets out of 17,500 tickets, which means the university had to absorb the cost of the remaining 14,729 tickets, and that bill came to somewhere close to $3 million. So here's the deal. If you don't want to lose money on your bowl appearance, make people go. Require that your students get on an airplane. Hire the plane. Ask Vernon Golston. He would have had the money.
The University of Oregon's recruiting policies are being questioned, Charlie. The Ducks apparently paid much more than the listed price for recruiting video services to a guy who just happened to be mentoring one of their recruits and traveling with another of their recruits. I can't imagine there's anything not on the up and up here.
Yeah, old Will Lyles. What could possibly go wrong? Especially considering he's described in the story about it as a, quote, speed coach turned recruiting services proprietor.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody knows what either one of those job descriptions is, please get in touch with us. Basically, it's a long way of saying bag man.
This week, Sports Illustrated and CBS News published the results of an investigation that found that 7% of recruited football players at the top 25 football powerhouses had criminal records, and the investigation also demonstrated that only 2 of those 25 schools had done any background checks on the people they were recruiting. Should they have done such checks?
First of all, I think that considering they're including things like DUI and you know, minor drug offenses, I'm surprised that the percentages aren't higher than 7%. I think if I were running a high-profile college sports program, I would want to know whether or not I was recruiting people with criminal records. But then again, you can run into all kinds of problems. I mean, there are states where you're not allowed to look at juvenile criminal records, and certainly nobody's going to expect the schools to go to court to open up, you know, juvenile criminal records.
The NBA held its first regular season game in London's O2 Arena last night, Charlie, and now British papers are declaring that London will have a team of its own within the next 10 years. So what do you think? Possibility of regular road trips across the Atlantic Ocean for NBA teams?
I think they should just move the Clippers there, because clearly it's never going to happen for them in Los Angeles.
On Wednesday night, Brigham Young University, late the No. 3 men's basketball team in the land, lost to New Mexico by 18 points. That loss was in part attributable to the absence of Brandon Davies. Is it fair to say that Mr. Davies was dismissed by BYU for a reason that nobody would have cared about or even noticed if he'd played anywhere else?
Yes, because Brigham Young has an honor code which requires that you not have premarital sex with anyone. And either Mr. Davies gave himself up or he was finked on, which leads me to believe that the Brigham Young campus and what used to be East Germany have a lot more in common than I thought they did. Brigham Young is being praised for standing by its principles, which I have a feeling is probably the reason why this happened in the first place. But it is remarkable, and it pretty much guarantees that very few players are going to go to Brigham Young who are not of the Mormon faith.
All right, there's a new record for the longest game in college hockey history, Charlie. Wednesday night's game between the women's teams at Queen's University and the University of Guelph ended 2-1 in Queen's favor after the sixth, count 'em, sixth extra period. You usually yell sports when I mention a new world record, but I assume that this is one that's worthy of a tip of the cap.
Yeah, this is the real thing, Bill. I mean, they played a 10-minute overtime and then four 20-minute overtimes before Morgan Mahaffey, remember that game to win free beers at your local? Well, somebody asked you who scored the game-winning goal in the longest hockey game ever. And I feel sort of bad for Guelph, actually, because it's a shame, Bill, when either team has to lose one of these. But the spectators are probably pretty happy that someone did.
I would think by the time the game ended, most of the spectators were asleep or they'd gone home. I don't know which. In Major League Baseball / financial news, is it accurate to say that Red Sox owner John Henry has learned that free speech can cost as much as $500,000 a paragraph?
$500,000, because John Henry pointed out that a lot of his quote-unquote small market unquote brethren are just pocketing the revenue sharing money and not plowing it back into the baseball product.
All right, let's get to some on-the-field baseball news. Spring training is, of course, in full swing, and it looks as if the Chicago Cubs are in mid-season form.
Well, this isn't quite on the field. It's in the dugout. It's closer to the
it's
field.
It's right next to
it's
the
closer
field.
To the field than we used to be. Yeah, they're slugging each other, Bill. Carlos Silva, one of the pitchers, and Aramis Ramirez, the third baseman, got in a punch-up in the dugout, and Silva was upset because he gave up six runs in the first inning, including three unearned because of errors. And apparently Silva came back in and started screaming about the defense. And Ramirez, who made one of the errors, took exception to that. And off we go for another wonderful season of Cubs baseball.
Finally, we come to the matter of David Beckham's most recent tattoo.
Oh, we do? Okay.
In which he apparently represents himself as Jesus. Look, long ago, a sports editor warned his writers against, quote, godding up the athletes. But what are we to do when the athlete gods up himself?
Stop godding up your pecs, Bex, basically. Yeah, he's got quite a half-nude dude there representing Jesus who's really kind of cut and much more than you would expect from a first-century Jewish carpenter. But he's also being attended to by cherubs who allegedly represent the younger Becks.
This is what David Beckham says. These are my sons.
At least he didn't call them his only begotten sons,
no.
But I'm sure he'll get there. But remember, of course, that these are also the children of Posh Spice. Make of that what you will, Dan Brown. Mary Magdalene, me no Mary Magdalene.
You know, he'll probably take you up on the challenge. Charlie Pierce is the author of Idiot America, among other books, and he joins me each week on Only a Game as well. Thanks, Charlie.
Just pay the guy $1 million.